Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Trad Tasman Talk. It is Friday, May the 15th, 2020. I'm Tim Wilms, editor-in-chief of The Unshackled. It is 6 p.m. here in Melbourne.
And I am Dewa De Boer of Right Minds NZ, and it is 8 p.m. here in Auckland, and it is good to see you all.
Yes, and we're firmly now on the path out of lockdown, but it looks like we're heading to the new normal is going to be when we enter a premises that's going to be papers please, or make sure you've got the app active please.
Exactly, and so the amount of powers that have been passed in New Zealand this week have been quite immense, and we'll go through them the show. But first I'll take some questions as people are starting to filter through, and I'll start with Kieran's one. Did I move? Sort of. I used to be sitting facing the other way, so making some changes to the office, and it's working out quite well, I think. I hope you enjoy a little painting in the background. If you can guess what it is, or then, well, there's not really any prize, but I'll give you a shout out if you can guess correctly what the painting is. And another question I've got here is somebody saying they saw that I was interested in classical languages and theology. What languages exactly? I studied Latin for a year, about 2 years of Latin in total. I did a year of Hebrew at a theological college, and I've done Greek as well, although I did less well at Greek, but at least those are my three areas of interest. But I'm an amateur at both, and I haven't really had much time to devote to them in the last few years.
And is everything that's behind you on your backdrop approved?
It's okay, carefully selected by Amy. So I see all the anime figurines have disappeared. So
yeah, that was at my request because we'll have. Nothing, no aesthetics in Unshackled productions, which imply that all you are is just a faceless behind the computer.
No, exactly. So I've been putting a book behind my sort of somewhere in the background the last few shows. I'm not sure if it's always been spotted, but so there's still a book there. Eventually there will be a lot of books, but I haven't had time to go through all my books and move and have a whole row of books back there. The intent was to have a whole bookcase behind me eventually, the entire wall. That's going to take a lot of time to shuffle stuff around. So,
well, I've always had, even though I've sort of added to it from week to week, my settings remain the same with the Austrian economist's photo behind me and my books there. Nobody's identified any of the books behind me. I know that Titana McGrath on Twitter, she's been looking at people's bookshelves who've been appearing on the news via Skype, looking for any unapproved books. And I'm not sure if she was watching the Bolt Report last night. He interviewed John Hindenrecker from Powerline blog and a Center for the American Experiment. He was talking about whether the lockdowns in the United States have actually been effective in suppressing the spread of coronavirus. And there was a book on the shelf. I don't know what the contents of the book was, but it had a swastika on it, which if a few of us noticed it, then I'm sure other people did as well. I don't know sort of how that sort of slipped through the sort of process.
Yeah, quality controls at the
Sky News.
Even at Sky News, but after you've had a few of these incidents in Australia with people checking to make sure that books are on the approved lists, Of course, in New Zealand, it's less of a problem. We had, you know, temporarily we had a state-approved only books for sale. So if you didn't have any books, you had to quickly buy some to make it look like you had a library. You could only get the ones that were pre-approved by the government, so you wouldn't stand at any risk of embarrassment at all.
Fiction was banned, which means you couldn't get during the, was it Alert Level 4, that's what you call it,
yes.
Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings.
That's right, but I do believe you could get some approved fiction, so I think The Hobbit, for instance, was okay.
Yeah. Which is, what about The Lord of the Rings, because that's a
book. I didn't check at the time, because some of them you could get and some of them you couldn't. But none of that matters anymore now, because it's we've got some massive legislation that basically lets them do whatever they want now, and we're going to get into that. But first, before we get into the results of COVID-1984, we should actually have a look at the actual numbers this week and run some comparisons. Is what we've been doing the whole show, basically the last 2 months, 3 months. So it feels a little bit like deja vu, but we're at the point now where we're having less than one case a day on average this week in New Zealand. So we had 3 days in a row with zero cases, and then two other days with one case, all of the cases are connected to existing clusters. There are zero people in ICU, and there are two in hospital, both in two separate Auckland hospitals. And that's it. That's what there is.
I'll go through Australia, our current infographic, because as you're aware by now, our federal government is big on the coronavirus infographic. So here it is here. So we've got less than 600 active cases now. So we're just below 7,000, but look at the amount of recovery, 6,300. We've still got less than 100 deaths. There was one death this week, but that was linked to the Ruby Princess. And you have a look at that positive rate now. We've nearly conducted 1 million tests, 0.7% positive rate, 18 in intensive care and 51 admitted to hospital. And we now have three jurisdictions in Australia now, which are now coronavirus free. Northern Territory, South Australia and WA have all confirmed all of their cases have recovered. And in the Northern Territory, New South Wales, today, that's the pubs are reopening, and I know my audience hate that I watch Sky News, but they had all their correspondents at a particular pub. Western Australia on Monday, they reopened because in NT and New South Wales, it's got the limit of 10, which is, and I know you're down to, what is it, Alert Level 2. I went through it last week. We have a three-step framework for COVID Safe Australia. So this is step one here. WA is going straight to step two on Monday. South Australia for the moment is only allowing outdoor dining. Victoria, he used to be called Premier, but we're deciding whether to call him the Dictator Daniel Andrews or Chairman Daniel Andrews. We did a poll last night on the Uncuckables, and most people preferred Dictator Dan, spelled D-I-C-K.
Oh, predictable, Tim.
Apparently, because the feedback that he got was that it was unviable for pubs to and cafes and restaurants to reopen with just a 10 customer limit, so he's just decided to make a decision on all their behalf to keep them keep them all closed, which is
and that's the big message of all of this is there is nothing that you can decide for yourself. The government, the benevolent dictatorship, has to decide on your behalf. The experts, the new state religion of scientism or expertism is going to decide on your behalf exactly what is safe for you to do and what is not safe for you to do.
And one of our state Liberal opposition MPs, he gave Dan Andrews a massive spray on it was on Wednesday night. This is what he said. Here's the Shadow Minister for Planning, Tim Smith. In Victoria, with control freak wowsers like Dictator Dan running the show, you can't even sit down for a coffee, let alone a beer. Our Premier is such a friendless loser. Of course, Victoria has no plans to reopen licensed venues. Who would invite Lurch for a drink? Hashtag Dan has no mates.
Oh, yes. That is... I think it's quite a way to go at it. Mm. We haven't really had any nicknames for Jacinda. She still is, other than Saint Jacinda, of course, the savior of New Zealand.
Well, she was originally
she's still loved by everyone.
When I went to the taxpayer union office when I interviewed Jordan Williams during the 2017 election, and I noticed on the wall the comrade Jacinta. Poster that was already a name back then.
Yeah, and that's because during the election campaign we had a video surface where while she was president of the International Socialist Youth, she gave a speech, I think in South America, I can't quite remember the exact location. She said "comrade" about 20 times in a 5-minute speech, and she was talking to her comrades how she was going to take over the world. So it fits very, very well. But we have had one. I would say, I don't know what you call them, a barman, somebody who owns a bar. They used to call them bar owners, I see. They used to be, but here.
You don't use the word pub in New Zealand.
Pub, no, we don't really use the word pub so much. I mean, it does get used, but that's not it. I see we have a correction for Jacinda's name, our glorious leader.
Dan Andrews has also been described as the deer. leader. Over the weekend, because I mentioned after when Scott Morrison announced the three-step framework, Dan Andrews said there'll be no change today, tomorrow, or on Sunday. The rules remain in place until the state of emergency expires on May 11th. So you were banned from seeing your mother for Mother's Day, and there was a Mother's Day protest on the steps of Victoria's Parliament, which was aggressively shut down by Victoria Police. They breached social distancing to enforce social distancing, because remember, that's how it works. They claim they arrested and fined 10 people, and we're going to track down the rest of the attendees, but it hasn't panned out that way. I spoke to one of the organisers on my Wednesday Wilms Front program, Fanos. I still can't pronounce his Greek surname, so I'm not going to attempt it. He runs the 99% Facebook group. It's us or them, where he is live vlogs that have become quite popular. And there's over the weekend in Sydney, there was a mother who, Renee Aotaki, who she held up a sign basically stating her rights with her son, and she was arrested and separated from her son. There was a father who was separated from his child in a pram at the Melbourne one. The police just decided to surround and harass him, which was pretty disturbing. Wow. So it was very ugly footage on the weekend, and so I hope that this is what has sort of sped up the lockdown relaxation. Dan Andrews announced on Monday that the state of emergency has been extended till May 31. That you could leave the house for a fifth reason, which is to visit family and friends. You could have 5 visitors to your house, and you can have outdoor gatherings of up to 10.
How benevolent.
Yeah, I know. So nice of him, but he's like, oh, this is not an excuse to have a rotating dinner party every night. Use your common sense. And I sort of felt like saying, but I'll be the judge of what common sense is, thank you.
Well, exactly, right. And and they're saying, oh yes, you should use common sense. Okay, well, why don't you let people use common sense? Right? Clearly you don't believe that anybody has any common sense. And the sense that they have is rather uncommon because the restrictions and rules they put in place for everybody else are rather have no basis. Really, they do not have any basis in any scientific study or experiment that we've run to say, okay, cool, we've tested this and that, and this many numbers are safe, and these numbers and this amount of time and this distance, right? None of that has been done. They just make this up.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
And the three jurisdictions that I mentioned that are now COVID free, WA, SA, and the ANT, they never went to a full house arrest like Victoria and New South Wales and Queensland did. And we've had, I mentioned the Cedar Meats Halal Slaughterhouse outbreak last week, which I think it got up to about, last time I checked, about 70 cases. There's been an outbreak at a couple of McDonald's in Melbourne's north now. Do you want a Corona with that order? That's the sort of one-liner that came to mind when I heard about that. But it's interesting, the state with the strictest, most draconian lockdown is the one that has all these outbreaks.
Yeah, and in Europe they've seen something similar. Of course, if you compare the UK numbers to Sweden's numbers, right, there's no evidence that the lockdown has any effect. New Zealand, in a sense, is slightly different, being an entirely isolated nation. It has been possible to completely destroy the economy, trample over everybody's civil liberties, enact the most anti-Christian policies that you could possibly think of, outside of communist China. And then you can eliminate coronavirus. The lockdown can work, if it's done on a small island nation like New Zealand with the kind of force that Beijing would be proud of. Then it works. But in countries that are either very large or have very porous borders, there's just no evidence. It's entirely random. Somebody in the chat has said you could meet 1,000 people at one time in one day and it's still legal, right? Exactly, because there's no sense behind any of this, and you shouldn't try to make any sense of it. It's intentionally provocative, you would say, right? It's intentionally confusing to waste your time and your energy trying to make sense of it.
We found, as I was saying, that we were told that the coronavirus could be airborne, and that it could spread so rapidly. Yet it's completely dying here in Australia. When the testing rate goes up, the positive rate goes down, and so it's clear that it's contracted just the same as the common flu is, and it's not as deadly as we were told that it would be, given that we've had nearly 7,000 cases in Australia, only 98 deaths, one who was under 50. And I've showed you the hospital figures before, and we keep getting warned about a second and third wave, or there might be a new virus. And of course, the precedent's been set: whenever there's a new virus we don't know anything about, shut everything down.
We had
it was in the news yesterday, there's a parrot fever outbreak in the Blue Mountains. Three people have contracted parrot fever, so hopefully that doesn't get out of
control. Did somebody eat a parrot? Is that a local delicacy, Tim? Is there something?
Not that I'm aware of. Maybe someone stroked it too many times or in the wrong way.
Yeah. Mm. You've got a lot of. We talked a little bit last week about the sporting events, the sporting scene in Australia, and I'll go over the one in New Zealand first because it's nice and short. What you can now do is if you're playing professional sports, you can play like usual. If you're doing community sports, you are down to 10 people or whatever. So you can play like five-a-side, a game of whatever you want. But don't you dare do six, else the enforcement officers will come to drag you away. But you could play. You're now allowed to play a little bit of sports. And for some reason, professional sports is very, very safe. Casual sports, very, very dangerous.
Well, the AFL CEO today, Gillon McLachlan, also known as the Gill, he announced that the AFL season would resume June the 11th, which is 2 weeks after the NRL resumes. And so beginning from this Monday, May 18th, there'll be a full-scale return to... There'll be non-contact training in groups of up to eight. And then on starting Monday, May 25th, there'll be full contact training. So players will be able to get physical again on May 25th. And because WA and South Australia have still got strict border controls, the teams from the west and the south, they're going to be in a hub on the Gold Coast. But of course, the condition on going to play sport in Queensland is getting a flu vaccination. And I've spoken to you before about the NRL player revolt over compulsory flu vaccination, which doesn't protect you from getting the coronavirus.
That's right.
But remember, the premier of that state, Anastasia Palaszczuk, allegedly got a flu vaccination and claimed she didn't feel anything and she was fine.
I actually saw a story. I don't know if you've seen it. That was from Australia, saying somebody had died 3 days after receiving.
That's a 2 year old story. 2 years old, okay. But it still happened. I think the hospital denied that there was a connection between the two.
Oh yeah, of course. We'll leave it at that and carry on. Mm.
But all going well, the two big codes will be back by mid June, and I know West and South Australians are hoping that by July, that's when it's predicted interstate borders will be open, that they can play, all teams can play in their home venues and maybe have a few socially distanced spectators as well. The NRL, there hasn't been much talk about their finances since their problem CEO Todd Greenberg resigned, and it's basically the chairman Peter Vallandi who is running it now, who's formerly Racing New South Wales administrator. He gave birth to the Everest horse race in Sydney, which is already pretty big after a few years. And of course, well, AFL, they've still got chests full of gold. They can survive anything.
Yeah. And well, speaking of chests full of gold, there's a good segue into New Zealand's budget that was announced yesterday, because that's something we really don't have. The big budget that was announced yesterday included a $50 billion of spending on some kind of economic. Well, I can't really say it's economic activity. It's basically a slush fund where they're spending on some pet projects, pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into buying literal free lunches for school children. You know, because we were always taught at school that there's no such thing as a free lunch. But
we've got that in. That's... We already got that in Victoria. The breakfast and lunch. Oh,
getting fancy.
Dental checkups as well.
So, well, it's very well. We do have free dental checkouts for children. So that's already, it's been like that in New Zealand for a long time. But now you can be taught. You have to be taught that there is such a thing as a free lunch in school. So that's the important lesson to take away from coronavirus. So there's a few hundred million going into that. There's a special money going to the Maori economy. So I don't know what that is going to be poured into, but apparently. The Maori have special needs that need to be taken care of with targeted spending. And then they've got a couple of billion dollars going into more wage subsidies. The government has to keep paying people's wages, obviously, because people are still not allowed to work. And still, because the initial scheme is supposed to go for 12 weeks, and it's going to be much longer than that, so that goes on. I don't think they'll be able to get through their 50 billion, but they've kept at least 20 billion in reserve for the election, because we've got about 4 months to go to the election. So if they can, a billion here, a billion there, the election should be done and dusted, no problem. The amount of debt that we're going to have accumulate in the next 5 years is $140 billion. That will bring New Zealand's total debt up to about 50% of GDP. We're currently at, 10, 15%. They're also going to do quantitative easing of $60 billion.
You've got to explain what, yeah.
Printing press go brr, money printer go brr. And that's basically what they're doing, just printing $60 billion of, they don't actually physically print it, right? They punch the numbers into the computer and feed it through to the artificial intelligence botnet thing, and then it has more money. That's how it works. It's kind of complex. You have to have a degree in economics to be able to understand it, so I can't really explain this to you. The other bonus is we're going to have they're doing all this so that we can have 9.8% unemployment, specifically so that Grant Robertson, the finance minister, can avoid 10% unemployment, because that would be really bad. So the target is to keep unemployment at basically 9.999%, because then it's not like double digits. Also, the employment numbers are fake, because if you're like semi-employed, it doesn't count. Like, you have to be properly, fully 0 hours working. So
That's the same with our unemployment figures, exactly, as well.
So that's all the good news. Oh, sorry, microphone. That was basically the budget. So it was a case of how much money can we spend? How long can we keep the New Zealand economy doing nothing so that we can basically have our economy will shrink by about the second greatest amount in the world. The greatest economy that's shrinking is, of course, going to be Venezuela. So we're going to be runner-up Venezuela. That seems to be the target.
Only just missed out on the model communist nation.
Yeah, exactly.
So is it being called a super well-being budget?
They ditched the well-being. There's no well-being anymore. It was called the jobs budget, or rebuilding as well. We will rebuild. It was rebuild something. Rebuilding New Zealand or something. They're gonna rebuild something, and it's about jobs. That's the thing. It's about jobs. So.
Well, that is I think better a political slogan for it. I remember our federal treasurer Josh Frydenberg back in February mocked our federal Labor Party for adopting the well-being budget, and he invoked several Hindu meditation references, which he had to apologize for in the end for offending Hindus, which we played it on the Unkakapos here, because it was obviously rehearsed. And that it was a Dorothy Dixer question from Andrew Hastie, and he launched into this, and he did the whole thing. He referred to the Shadow Treasurer Jim Chalmers, the member for Rankin, and he had like a graphic of meditation positions that Labor were going to take. Yeah. It was quite humorous, and he correctly pointed out that. All that a well-being budget is just another name for Labor's higher taxes and spending, which is right.
That's right. Well, there's some good news. There's no higher taxes. So it's all going to be borrowed, so that my grandchildren or great grandchildren can pay it off as slaves to the communist China, whoever. I'm guessing we're borrowing it from Beijing. Good guess. Maybe Japan will be nice and give us some, who knows. The good news, I have to give you the good news. I nearly missed the good news on the budget. The light rail, we discussed light rail, it feels like years ago, but it was basically just before coronavirus. I'm sure we were talking about light rail.
Oh, yeah.
It's been thanks to the one good thing that coronavirus has killed has been light rail in Auckland. It's now dead. So there you go. gotta have a silver lining, right?
Well, Chairman Dan, he wants to build more infrastructure, of course, with the assistance of the One Belt, One Road program, which getting financial assistance from China, what could go wrong?
Yeah, and you know, it's the case. Oh, yeah, we're borrowing all of this money. Yeah. Where's it coming from? Actually, they haven't said. I haven't seen anybody talk about where the money's coming from. But you know, there's not very many places it can come from, really.
Well, when Josh Frydenberg did his mocking of the well-being budget, that was in February of this year, when he was still quite confident that he was going to deliver a budget surplus on this Tuesday, but instead he gave a budget and economic update, which was incredibly grim. The budget deficit for this financial year is not going to be a $7.1 billion surplus, but a $100 billion deficit. Economic activity is going to retract by 10%. We have 1.4 million Australians on Job Seeker, so people who are, as the name suggests, actively looking for work. Doesn't include the people who are not looking for work, and 5.5 million people are on the Job Keeper allowance, and 835 businesses are part of the program as well, and 600,000 Australians have lost their jobs since the shutdowns began. Because I think he was delivering such a grim news, and he was clearly exhausted during his speech, he went into a 2-minute coughing fit where every time he took a sip of sparkling water to restart, he broke into a coughing fit again. And he used his hand originally, but then he remembered, oh, I've got to use the elbow. But I noticed because I watched.
And then he went to shake everybody's hand after, right?
Well, I don't think he did that, but I noticed that next to him at the dispatch box was some hand sanitizer, which I'm like, you know, you need to use that after you've like coughed on, but he didn't use it. He still put his coffee hands on the but he did, after he'd finished delivering it, go into self-isolation, got a coronavirus test, which, as I expected, turned up negative, because, well, that's not an uncommon occurrence.
But now every time anybody coughs, right, it's like suddenly you know, panic.
Can I share an experience from a previous show? This is when I used to do the pre-recorded Unshackled Waves program. I'd had the thing, if you have a high carb meal before you broadcast, you get dehydrated very quickly. And so I'd had a pizza before I started recording, which is very high in carbs, and I hadn't appropriately hydrated myself. And during the recording, I burst out into a huge coughing fit. I've probably still got the outtake on file, so I don't know, maybe I should dig it up and say this is when you could cough and nobody thought you had corona. It was just very embarrassing.
And this, everyone, this story is the reason why I always drink gin on the show. Got to stay hydrated and avoid coughing over everyone. And of course, gin kills coronavirus as well. We covered that like 3 months ago now. In fact, I was just talking to somebody this morning about the hand sanitizer. They said, oh, the hand sanitizer is so liquidy now, the new stuff. And I said, yeah, it comes from the distilleries. So they said, oh, really? Somebody, you know, they thought, it does smell a bit like gin and tonic. And I said, yeah, just they take the heads and the tails off the gin, the batch of gin that goes into the bottles, into the store, and then they turn the rest into hand sanitizer, and there you go. So
I wonder if that's going to be the new thing, is that young kids buy at the supermarket, since they can't legally buy alcohol, to get a bit of a buzz from, because food dye and colouring that has alcohol in it, and it's known in Australia for kids to buy those for a bit of alcohol, and of course Listerine as well has alcohol in it.
I mean, I remember years ago reading cases of basically people killing themselves accidentally with, you know, sniffing hand sanitizer or whatever they were doing with it. So, you know, there's going to be definitely going to be a lot of weird side effects. And as well, the hand sanitizer kills all of the all the good bacteria on people's hands as well. And so, including with them staying indoors, you know, we're going to become permanently immune deficient. And have to remain confined to our homes for the rest of our lives. That's a likely scenario. Feels a little bit far-fetched, but I'm not going to rule anything out at this stage. If I told you that this was going to be happening a few months ago, I would have laughed at myself.
Well, this was spotted outside a Bunnings in Australia. Somebody put this on the back of their car. No one should be allowed to drive again until there are no fatal accidents for 14 consecutive days. Then we can slowly begin to phase in certain classes of people who begin driving again, but only half the posted speed limit. Hashtag safety. Yeah, because seat belts and speed limits, they aren't enough.
Well, it's the case now, right? Like, if the primary role of the government is to keep you safe and to stop you from dying, there are great incentives now for massive changes to, the road usage. Although, it probably will not come to pass, but could be cautious saying
maybe.
That. They're restricting people in just about every way. It's for your safety. Particularly with how, in a sense, ordinary the coronavirus has been as a plague, as a outbreak of disease. Every 10, 20 years, you get something that's far less dangerous than coronavirus. Every 100 years, you often will get something, much, much worse.
Yeah, and this
seems to be a run-of-the-mill.
To be the Spanish flu.
No, exactly. So your worst case scenario is just nowhere near as bad as the Spanish flu. In fact, at its worst case now, it's probably going to be as bad as the one from the 50s or 60s.
The Asian flu in 57, and the Hong Kong flu in 68. Before we move on, we've got a few super chats that have accumulated in the Unshackled YouTube chat. There's a $5 one from Senator Slayer, who says, "Tim is not gay." Thank you for that statement. And we've got a $20 one from Dino Marsden, who sends through a super chat every show now for $20. Thank you very much. "Evening, good stuff, lads. I do think the lockdown has prevented corona, but it has reduced it. We will now rethink our immigration policy." Well, that's been the silver bullet that has killed the virus, not importing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, exactly. And I'll read the next one since aimed at me. Senator Slayer for $2. "Beards looking Chad boar."
Yeah, because you did have a grooming session, facial grooming session before the show.
I can finally go to my hairdresser again, which happens to just be Amy. My barber, I have a barber. Sorry, Amy is my barber. She'll be watching the show. And so finally it's legal to, get a haircut again. So it was a little bit annoying not being allowed to get a haircut in your own home, but it is what it is, right?
Mm. What you were getting at is that with the coronavirus, we've seen an outbreak of totalitarianism and nanny statism. This was snapped at, I think, one of the beaches in Sydney. Have I got it here? No, I haven't. I think I've got a... I'll get it in a moment. You remember the Bondi Beach photograph when... which was the trigger for closing down pubs, cafes and restaurants. All the people at Bondi Beach on a Friday night on a hot Sydney day weren't socially distancing, and so they closed down that beach and a lot of other beaches after that episode. Now, some beaches have reopened. Some states like WA never closed their beaches, but this was taken in Sydney, this photograph. These are, I don't think you can see it here, but council ambassadors, and that's what's on the back of their shirts. Mm-hmm. Keep 1.5 meters between each other. And I haven't got a measuring tape here, but they look a bit closer than 1.5 meters, these council ambassadors. And I don't want sort of like, you know, it sounds a bit creepy, people watching you at the beach to, yeah, to make sure that you're socially distancing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure they get lots of applications for that kind of job, you know. rather unsavory people will be keen to be out there. But I don't know what the temperature is like there in Australia, because here in New Zealand it's I'll start wearing my jacket again since the last show. But definitely the temperature has dropped. It's probably autumn out there, which is sort of almost my favorite time of the year. Really, it's everything feels kind of crisp. Really. I quite enjoy that. There's nobody going to be going to beaches here in New Zealand.
And now talk about Jacinta Ardern's Enabling Act, which is designed to give her absolute power to decide what's allowed in New Zealand, and the police unlimited power about how to enforce her decrees, which is your parliament hasn't caught fire yet, so... they're still going through the parliament.
It's actually gone through parliament. They got it in Wednesday night. Wednesday night. So they went through 2 days of basically nonstop reading and debating, etc. Quickly rushing it through. They ran it through. They've just actually today sent it back to select committee. So it is the law of the land. But it's actually going back to be reviewed by the select committee because
after the fact,
because the last time they accidentally spent like billions of dollars by passing the wrong thing. So they're going through and properly reviewing it now that they've passed it, just in case. So it's like one of those cases where you've got to pass it to find out what's in it.
Yeah, which is what
Now, rather than us finding out what's in it, they're going to find out what's in it and then tell us.
That's what that came from Nancy Pelosi when she was lobbying to pass Obamacare. We've got to pass it to find out what's in it. And have you seen that viral footage of her this week where basically her the plastic on her face is bright red? I think she needs to, suck all the blood from a baby to get a youth back again.
I watched a very short clip that was different, but she looked completely plastic or wooden, you know, like her mouth was moving and her lips, but there was absolutely no motion in her face whatsoever because of all of the Botox, right? She is just walking plastic a skeleton encased in plastic basically at this point. Quite creepy.
Maybe too much ice cream from that from her mansion.
So what you need to know about the Enforcement Act, the main things are that they have a class of enforcement officers. That's probably the first thing. So enforcement officers can be anybody appointed by the Attorney General, who listens to the Prime Minister.
So they can just pick a random off the street.
They could just, like, they could pick me if they're watching the show. They could make me an enforcement officer, and I could go around and walk into people's houses and, look behind the couch to see if there's any, people who are not supposed to be there hiding there. They used to do, I forget where exactly, but I feel like this has been done before.
When they used to go inside people's homes to make sure that there was, you know, no gatherings that the state didn't approve of. And they used, you've already had the informants. Community informants, the snitch line.
Exactly. So those are continuing. The snitch line is continuing, and the act basically it can be brought into force, and the orders can be made by the Prime Minister herself. So the previous ones required like the Chief Health Officer to make a pandemic declaration, but now the Prime Minister herself makes the declarations. She appoints her own enforcement officers, through the Attorney General. They made a bunch of changes. They were going to restrict roadblocks to be police only. There's a weird controversy in New Zealand because the mongrel mob has been running roadblocks. But the mongrel mob was very upset by that, and so they changed the bill quickly so the mongrel mob can continue to run roadblocks alongside the police. They were going to give the police the power to enter private homes and marais. And for the Australian audience, a marae is like a Maori gathering place, like a... I don't know, sort of public house. I think
community center.
Community center. Yeah, community center. That will be the modern day PC term for that. So it's like a special community center for them. So that was removed, so that they do actually would need a warrant to go in there now.
So they do need a warrant, but the original draft was
draft. They didn't, but they do for your house. But the community centers, community centers, but the marais specifically, they had singled those out, and that people were very, very angry. I'm being told that is the director general. Okay. I was told it's not actually through the attorney general, it's through the director general. Okay. Whatever.
Who's the director general?
That is the, I'm going to wait for the chat to tell me, but that is it's the director general of health, right? So it is still the same. I was slightly mistaken there. I'll give it a minute for that to come through the chat. So it is, but it is the okay. So it's through the Prime Minister, and I forget who we'll find out who the mouthpiece is at the moment. In the moment, it was supposed to last for 2 years. They basically said they're still going to do that, but it has to come back to Parliament now in 90 days. So it will come back to Parliament in 3 months to review it. They'll have to have another vote to say yes or no. But again, the plan is 2 years. It has just been confirmed. The chat is the Director General of Health. Sorry. Okay. So there we go. So, which is similar to normal. Although the Health Act had several extra steps of review, and I haven't got them open in front of me, so I can't go through the differences now. Mm. But it is essentially just Prime Ministerial decree, and you know they have to do what she says because she can basically fire anybody anyway. Obviously cabinet has to go along with it, and yeah. But it becomes the point where it is just one person at the top can say, you know, she says what she wants and it gets done. But of course these powers that have been handed to the police, the police have said they're going to be very careful. They're not going to abuse them. So the police have said, you shouldn't have laughed. That was inappropriate, Tim.
I've heard such assurances before.
And as soon as these things are no longer needed, they're going to disappear. Okay, so they've assured us. Chenda said, as soon as we're done with level two, this is going to go. It's not going to be needed. Except, of course, the question is, why did we need it now?
Yeah, exactly.
This is more powerful than what they had under level 3 and 4, by the way, because that level 3 and 4 were illegal, and they obviously this is essentially an acknowledgement of that, and that's been passed, and that's so it's now legal they can do it, and there will be level 1 and level 0 and level -1 and so on, and that's not in the legislation because the Prime Minister gets to declare what each level is and what the boundaries are on each level and who can do what, et cetera, et cetera. But there is a lot of vagueness around the enforcement and the limits, like what constitutes a gathering. So there's already a lot of debate about that. They're basically saying if you're in a social setting, what you have to say 1 meter apart if you can. But outside of a gathering, it's 2. So if you're 2 meters apart, then you're technically not gathering, essentially. So they keep 2 meters apart when they're waiting in lines outside stores and walking through stores, etc. Then you're 2 meters apart. And the reason they can have, you know, lots and lots of people is they're technically not gathering. Then, of course, the question is, well, what happens if you have, like, groups of people that are 2 meters apart? Do you have a gathering? Like, is that a gathering or is each individual group a gathering? And there's... and those questions can be decided by each individual enforcement officer, likely is what's going to happen. The kind of silver lining here is you are technically not really doing anything illegal unless an enforcement officer bursts through your front door and tells you you're doing something illegal, and then you can comply with whatever they tell you to do, and then you should be safe, kind of. That's what it looks like. So they'll probably, but you know, who knows, they may do the whole like warning system, repeat offenders, who knows, but there is no certainty around any of this. It is incredibly vague. intentionally so, and it's going to take maybe weeks before we find out what it is. People are like, oh, it's only 2 weeks. Yeah, I mean, that's what they said with the lockdown, whatever.
Yeah, only are. To flatten the curve, which we have done.
Yes.
But we're seeing in Victoria, when it's up to the officer's discretion, how it can they can issue fines that most people would consider lunacy for washing your dirty car when you use your car for work shipping goods. In Victoria, they've changed the fine process now that it's no longer Victoria police officers' personal discretion. They have to get approval from their superiors to issue a fine now that we're at step one partial step one of the framework. But it is going back to New Zealand. It's good that they've made sure that they've properly legislated fascism. They're not going through the proper.
It's completely legal. Mm. It's completely legal. We don't have to worry about any of that anymore. You know, before it was like, oh well, is this really legal? Mm. Does anybody actually have to follow these rules? Well, the answer now is like, yeah, okay, we're good. We're sorted. Mm. We don't have to worry anymore. Everything's completely legal. I see somebody posting the Bill of Rights. No, you can shred that up and throw it in the bin.
Yeah, we have a charter of human rights and responsibilities in Victoria as well. Like that doesn't seem to have been very useful at the moment, given that it's still illegal to protest the government, hold them to account who are making the decisions about your life.
And I think people are going to be testing the boundaries of what this is. I talked about the bar owner right at the beginning of the show, who's going to have 100 people in groups of 10 in his bar or in his restaurant. He's a bar owner. He's going to have a restaurant, because if you're serving food, you're okay. If you're primarily serving alcohol, you've got to wait until next week.
Yeah, well, that's the case in New South Wales with their pubs. So you have to be in for a meal to get a drink, which is sort of, you can't just go in and get a frothy.
Yeah, but he's going to have 10 of 100 of his friends, so-called friends, around and have a big party. It's unsure how that's going ahead, but that would theoretically all be fine. He could be, you could have an enforcement officer who doesn't like him could go in there and just tell everyone to go home anyway. You'd have to listen. You've got the Apostle Bishop Brian Tamaki, who's been mentioned on the show before, the leader of Destiny Church, who is a very controversial figure in New Zealand, and I'm going to leave it at that. He's announced he's going to have a massive church service this Sunday, and he's going to recommend to stay in their cars, kind of like what he did before when the initial restrictions came in. He's going to tell people to stay in their cars. He's going to let as many people inside as he probably can. Like, there'll be gazillions of cops there to make sure that, it's not too many. But they will basically be, testing the legal boundaries, I suppose, which in and of itself I think is quite good. And the police will probably tread quite carefully.
Which is wise, because I noticed in Adelaide on Tuesday, we shouldn't call them anti-vaxxers, vaccine skeptics, that's what you should call them. They demonstrated in Adelaide's Rundle Mall, which is an iconic city mall in Australia, and the South Australian police were sensible enough to just let them have their say and not arrest them just have a huge PR disaster.
The question will remain, for instance, if you have 500 people together in their cars and they stay in their cars and then go out, is that a gathering, etc.? If he's got groups of 10 people here and there around the place and they're however many meters apart, is that a gathering? That's good to test. I think there are plenty of other places that are going to be going a similar route. I know there are some sort of more official protests planned over the next couple of weekends. And they're looking at a similar thing where, like, okay, well, if everyone stays 2 meters apart, or you have groups closer than that are of 10 people, then they can't say that we're breaking any rules. So
we've still got to find out whether
we're going to get creative.
All of these restrictions on freedom of assembly are actually legal. Like,
well, that's still a thing. Like, it's been legislated in New Zealand, but it's still, there is still a judicial review under place. This is definitely against the Bill of Rights, and it's a case of, okay, well, if you don't have any a justified reason, like there's no virus in New Zealand. So they've said since the beginning, no community transmission. Okay, if there's no community transmission, then they don't need to quarantine the people who are affected, et cetera, which is how a quarantine is supposed to work. And this whole thing is under a judicial review, but there's no guarantee that the judiciary will do the right thing, right? So the decision the judiciary makes may be a political decision, right? It's rather obvious looking at the Bill of Rights to say, no, all of this is illegal. Actually, you do have rights. In a broader sense, your rights don't come from the government. Your rights don't come from the Bill of Rights, even, right? Your rights are natural law. They're God-given rights. The government can oppress you, but they cannot genuinely, truly take your rights away because they are inherent. You have them. You are born with them. So,
Nothing's yet to be tested in court in Victoria. If, as I've said previously, if any. The people who got issued fines by Victoria Police, the reason they received them is because they waived their right to silence by telling the police why they were out, and the police used their discretion.
None of your business, officer.
Yeah, if any of them have actually paid the $1,658 fine, then more the fool them, because. If the courts invalidate one of them, that could potentially set a precedent to invalidate them all.
Yeah, and we have cases in front of the courts now, and we could see some interesting action taking place, especially if it was found that the first couple of weeks before they went, you know, full hardcore and actually invoked the correct powers and started passing legislation, et cetera, et cetera. Especially in the early days, there could be a lot of, successful legal action taken. And all of that remains to be seen. We can speculate, which is why the advice to people is to stay safe and stay free. Watch out for the government. You don't have to watch out for coronavirus anymore in New Zealand because it's not there. It's in, you know, unless you're part of these clusters, unless you're connected to these people who have it, which is very, very small scale. So stay safe from the government. We're getting close to wrap up time. So I think
stay safe from the Ching Koms, Chinese communists,
exactly.
because they're actually following through with some of their threats to trade with Australia, banning the importation of our barley and importing of meats from four abattoirs. I heard that New Zealand, they're getting some of their sight back as part of the Five Eyes network when it comes to China.
Yes, we have. It's the classic Winston Peters is back in campaign mode. The election's coming up. He's actually sided with Taiwan, said that Taiwan should be part of the WHO. Although why you'd want to be part of the WHO, that I do not know.
It's more just Taiwan, a troll, I think.
It is. They are just trolling China, obviously. That's what it's got to be. But they were the only ones who didn't listen to the WHO, and they're number one in the world in terms of most tests, least cases, least deaths, etc. Taiwan are the best off. But basically they're trolling, and our foreign minister has taken their side. And Australia side. So there seems to be quite a bit. There seems to be a good reorientation there towards Taiwan, Australia, and
very
America.
Very courageous position by Winston Peters.
Yeah, well, exactly. We'll see if it pays off for him. I do believe, really do believe, in the long run, it is good for New Zealand. So I've criticized him a lot for looking after his own best interests, but in this case, this isn't the best interest of New Zealand. Even if it does hurt our trade with China in the short term, I mean, that was a bullet we were going to have to take regardless if we were ever going to untangle ourselves from the CCP. So it has to be done.
Well, we've got still got our own a cluster of CCP apologists in our parliament and in business. Labour Senator Kim Carr, also known as Kim Jong Carr, he claimed that calling for an independent investigation into the origins of coronavirus was anti-scientific Nazism. Which is that's quite a, like, I know everybody calls everybody a Nazi these days, but that's an extraordinary long bow to draw.
Wow, well, they've got, you know, got nothing left. It's all going to come apart one way or another. You know, as we talked about in the show today, the economic realities will be setting in New Zealand by the time we get to September of the election. It probably won't be bad enough, but the signs are there. And New Zealand's views, I believe the views the Labour Party is taking and the reports the Treasury is churning out from are very optimistic, especially looking at Australia's numbers. We're going to be in much worse shape than Australia, and yet they're predicting that we're not really, you know, we're going to be sort of on par where you guys are. I think that's quite hard to believe at this point. I did want to finish off though with one maybe more positive story, especially since I had the question about the classics at the beginning, classical languages that I answered right in the first minute of the show. A story I did see this week was about music, and it's not really a New Zealand Australia story, but it's from the UK. And the headline says, "Interest in Billie Eilish has dropped during the lockdown," new study claims. And so they're actually saying people are gravitating most towards traditional cultural music, and Russian literature even. But people are listening to classical music. Sports programs, and we talked a lot about sports on this show, has dropped about, you know, what, a 33% drop there. They're seeing a big dislike in the modern music, especially the kind of depressing music. People used to want to be depressed before coronavirus. Maybe they've moved away from that. And I got to get the numbers here for classical music. Up 13%, blues and jazz up 9%, and, you know, people are looking for more meaningful things to listen to, people who haven't completely succumbed to despair, and that's a step in the right direction. They haven't quite got to the final destination, but if they're doing classical music and jazz and reading Russian literature, they're taking slow steps in the right direction.
James Fox Higgins, he published an essay, it's on the unshackled.net, about one of Billie Eilish's film clips from last year, where it looks like she's giving birth to Satan, and he called it probably the most demonic New World Order anthem there is. So you picked probably the perfect example of contemporary music that people are moving away from.
Right. Yeah, well, that's I really do hope that. And that's actually the same reaction I had when I first saw like a 10-second clip from Billie Eilish that my wife showed me. And it was probably about a year ago. She's like, "Oh, this." I saw the name come up. I'm like, "Who's that?" I'm like, "Oh, this." And I listened to 10 seconds of it. I'm like, "Man, that's satanic. That's demonic." Mm. And I see that James Fox Higgins had the same reaction there. So that's good. Good to see people moving to more wholesome and more traditional forms of music and entertainment. And I do hope that lasts. That could be a real positive long-term effect if it is. And, you know, then something good will have come from all of this badness, all of this misery. And I think that's a happy note on which to end this episode of Trad Tasman Talk. And I'll give you the final word before I've got to go.
Yep. So as I said to my audience on Wednesday, I've cut back on my live shows. So I'm doing three nights a week now. So I'll be next on air Wilmsfront, 6:30 p.m. Melbourne time on the YouTube and DLive channel. Uncuckables is back to once a week, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time on the show YouTube and DLive channel. And of course, Trad Tasman Talk rounds out the week at 6 p.m. Melbourne time, 8 o'clock Auckland time, on the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel. And later tonight, of course, Dear Beltran and Friends is on 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time on her channel. There is no What's Yon About Now by Logan Spalding this week. He'll be back next week at the later time of 7:30, so we don't need to sort of rush up in case we're going over time, which we've got that little bit of leeway there. We had Logan on the Uncuckables last night, which was fun since he's not on there this week. James Fox Higgins, he was back with his live show this week. He's also cutting back on his weekday lunchtime show just to 3 days a week, and he's also working on a rejigged Foxy Fridays variety show, which he's also asked me to do a segment for. So that's a nice little project as well. And I'm just going to finish off with maybe some sort of brainstorming out loud. There's so much US stuff to talk about at the moment, with Obamagate and Tara Reid. I'm just going to put the sort of feelers out there. There could be room for Atlantic show in the alt media schedule, just to talk about maybe US, UK, European politics, because it certainly does. I think our audience would like us giving it a bit more scrutiny, because I'm not sure if you've been following Obamagate with the unmasking of those conversations, but it's should be way more scandalous than CNN and The Guardian are making it out to be.
Oh yeah. Well, they're running cover for their people, right? That's the way. They still, to a certain degree, control the means of dissemination of information. Although they are, losing their grasp on it slowly, they will hold on. They will hold on till the very end. You know,
BuzzFeed is out of Australia and the UK now, so that was a thing we celebrated yesterday. So. Coronavirus is making the mainstream media quite sick and killing a few of them off outlets off. Yep. So that's a positive thing.
Absolutely. Very good. Well, even better news to end the show on. Thank you, everyone, for watching. It's been good to see you all in the chat, and we hope to see you back next week. And until then, stay safe and stay free. Good night.